NOP host Chris Bashan recently relocated from Chicago to Los Angeles, but before leaving, he recorded a series of nerdy topics with some of his best guests and friends. These are their stories. And we are back. I have Dan Schiffmacher with me on the mic. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, so you chose the topic. What are we talking about?
Oh, man, I get a little more philosophical with this one. Gaming culture, I think, is my topic. Where, so you got, like, I'd like to talk about what it was like for both of us.
Okay.
You know, back, you know, growing up, and then where it is now, and then where we think it's going to be in the future.
I think that's great. Before we jump in, should we attempt to define gaming culture, or like, are you wanting to put a label on that?
I don't know. I'm pretty open to, like, I guess just when I mean gaming culture, people who are really into video games, and it's changed, I guess. 'Cause, like, you know, like, websites like IGN and things were just talk about all things games and then try to, you know, get you
sure
everything. And back in, I mean, we're relatively the same age, right?
I think I'm older. How old are you?
I'm 31.
I'm 37.
Okay, you
so
are.
I am older than you. Yeah, wow. I know. I didn't realize.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you. But somewhere in my family, a vampire and an elf hooked up.
Oh,
so,
nice. Yeah. So like you especially, because I was born when the NES came out.
I was.
So you were the prime age to play.
I was the prime age. Yeah.
So that's even more for you, because, like, you got to see the resurgence of the.
I'm so happy.
Video games
with the age of video games that I grew up with.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really happy. I'm glad I wasn't born in, like, the Super NES was my first. I'm glad that was not the case. Like, I'm glad the NES and the Game Boy were effectively, like, my first consoles. Like, it was so cool. And everyone, like, talks about the video game crash. I do not remember it.
Right. You know? I read, there's a book, Console Wars. I read that. And I think that actually happened, like, prior to you. Like, I think it was, like, there were games in the 70s, and then they were kind of, and it got burnt out by the 80s.
Yes. I've never played the E.T. game from that crash. I have seen it, but I have never played it. I did not own it. But we owned game consoles before NES.
We
had an Intellivision, which was the weirdest thing. And my dad was very much into computers, so we always had computers in my house, even when they were not a thing that people had.
You had DOS games.
I had games that were like 12 floppy disks, like literally floppy disks.
So that was kind of like, my dad is a computer programmer, and my mom and dad were super against us playing video games unless it was raining. Like, it was like a bad day or something like that. It was me and my brother. I have a twin brother. And so, like, he'd go outside and play or do something else. So we didn't have them, and eventually they came home with a Nintendo, but it was after, like, I was born. So it was probably when I was 4 or 5, so 92, when SNES came out. But they could get, you know, so we were a little behind the curve of things, but I still was able. And then they got us a Game Boy, like the original Game Boy.
Yeah.
And so when we were to go outside,
You took the Game Boy?
Yeah.
So, oh, my God.
So that was, but, like, I remember the DOS games. Like, there was a nursery rhyme one I played. There was Commander Keen was another one that I played.
I mean, like, we had Ataris, like, Atari computers, and then we had Amiga computers.
I've heard about those.
Which I don't think Amiga is around anymore, but they all, like, played DOS and floppy games. And, like, we would go to like the tent sales, like someone would put up a tent, and then, like, hundreds of people would come and they would be selling games, and they were all burned. They were all, like, pirated games. Like, it was a way to get games really cheap, you know?
Yeah.
Because there was no copyright protection back then, or no
for
one
computer,
thought about that for computer, for sure. Yeah. And then, of course, you could buy something and it may not work, but you paid like $2 for it. But I played a ton of games on the computer before even, like, jumping into console.
Right. So they would let us play these DOS games, because some of them were, one of them was like a Mother Goose kind of nursery rhyme game, but it was tied to a piano. So you had to kind of like learn, so educational kind of things about stories and things, which I always, like, to this day love, and I think I'll try to instill that in whatever, because, like, I feel like if you make learning fun, you know, then it's it's great. So
Mario Teaches Typing was great,
right? That's right.
Mario Paint was great.
You know what, a lot of people, I didn't play Mario because SNES, right? And I never played it, but that's what people, when Mario Maker came out, like, people were like, oh, you can make music like you can with Mario Paint. I'm like, I didn't know that was a thing you could do.
There was a music maker.
That's interesting. But back, you know, 80s and 90s, like, the culture, or how we knew about info about games, how we found out about things, were magazines.
Yeah. Nintendo Power, man.
Yeah.
Nintendo Power. I love Nintendo Power. I loved Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
She is gone now.
Yeah. I just moved into a new place, and part of the kind of thing I just immediately put in storage that I don't know if she knows is still there is it's a bin, and half of it's full of Nintendo Power
magazines.
That's
great. What's the oldest Nintendo Power magazine you have?
I think eventually what's going to happen is I'm going to save my oldest one, and I do have, I managed to get a copy of the last issue.
I really wanted to, and I couldn't find it.
My oldest one, I think, talks about, I remember, because I started paying, I bought them myself, so I think I know that I had them around the GameCube time. So I don't know, I'd have to look, but I think maybe like late 90s, late early 90s. 2000s, maybe, because I know that Majora's Mask was one of them that I had.
Nice.
So but like that was like the thing, you know, in the art and like all the, like,
yeah,
my favorite was, because like I would play the Game Boy, like Zelda games or whatever, and then you'd have a Nintendo Power or a strategy guide. They just have the entire floor map of the everything.
Yeah, yeah. The Nintendo Power was so amazing because it was game FAQs before there were game FAQs.
Mm-hmm.
It was codes. It was cheats, but it was also developer interviews. It was all your favorite things that you can just find so easily now on the internet in a publication.
Yeah.
You know, I really liked Nintendo Power. And I know, like, PlayStation and I think Xbox had similar things, but they just didn't.
There's like PS Magazine. Magazine.
Yeah.
I remember buying like one or two of those. I don't know if Xbox. There was other ones like Electronic Gaming Monthly was one of them.
It was something about the focus of just being a Nintendo product. Like, it was another Nintendo product, really.
Yeah.
That I really attracted
it
to me.
Straight from the source, I think, is like one of the things.
That, the first Nintendo Power I had, the first one I got, was about Mega Man 3. And Mega Man 3 is my favorite Mega Man game. And I sometimes wonder, I'm like, huh, I wonder, like, it's the reason I bought the game was that Nintendo Power. Mm-hmm. I had heard of Mega Man 2, but I had not played it. And I was like, oh, this looks really cool.
Yeah.
And it totally worked. Like, I bought that game because of that magazine. And I love that game because of that game.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I would have found that game if it wasn't for that magazine. Yeah. Isn't that weird?
So, well, yeah, and I guess, I don't know, this might be skewed a little bit of our discussion about, like, there, then and now, because we were a different age then. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if, I mean, I'm, and I don't know that I was as into video games as much as I am. I mean, I always have been, and I have like all these old Nintendo games and everything like that, but I don't know that I was as excited and like just obsessed with like indie games and all sorts of games as I am with the Switch now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just because they made it accessible to so many. 22 games came out this week. I don't know when this
Lord.
Is releasing, but 22 games for the Switch released
Jesus.
This week.
God.
So like,
And most of them are really good, if not great. Like you mentioned, Hollow Knight recently came out for the Switch. The Messenger is supposed to be fantastic.
I heard about
it. Looks really good.
I haven't played that. Yeah.
Dead Cells. Mm-hmm. You know, I think like the indie scene is a very interesting place.
Well, yeah, and that's something that it just speaks to the accessibility of things, because like, you know, I everything about the Switch makes sense to me, because like, the Wii U had some indie games. I have Shovel Knight on there, but and I would love to go back and play that, but it's just the way that you do, like, I can't just bring this and play it on, you know, anywhere. You know, that's how I complete games here and there. So it's I don't know. So my point was, I don't know that I was I don't know. I don't I guess I don't know if I was as in tune with the community of games. I guess it was different then because there was no internet.
Were your friends into video games, or was it just like kind of your
house? Well, they all had something. Like, I went to a friend's house and would play PlayStation.
Okay.
And we would go over there, and we would rent some PlayStation games from Blockbuster and just play, you know, we had a sleepover or whatever. So you would just play a bunch of different kinds of games. So I would be exposed to that there.
Yeah.
I had another friend who had a Sega Saturn.
Whoa! So we would
play,
nice.
We would play, you know, that. So, like, I think no matter where I went, everybody had something that they were into. So there was definitely that kind of offline, I guess, community.
It's weird. My tribe of people.
Yeah.
Like we all had games, but we also all had similar tastes. So like, of course, we all had Mario 3.
Yeah.
And we would like talk about that on the playground, you know. Yeah. Which is what Miyamoto wanted with Zelda. and like, I was the Mega Man fan. Another friend of mine was the Castlevania fan. So we would like trade stories, but we would all kind of come back together for certain releases, like Final Fantasy. We all loved Final Fantasy. Donkey Kong Country, when that came out, holy shit. We were like, oh my God, did you get the t-shirt? Yeah, I got a t-shirt with mine. That's awesome.
See, that's interesting because like I was, so I guess so I was behind, but then when it came to, you know, me being able to afford certain things, like I kind of got back on track current with the people that were playing. So like Pokemon for the Game Boy was the thing that kind of got me back into being around popular culture of people and things.
You mentioned that you got an NES late.
Yeah.
So like, were you always a step behind the culture and zeitgeist of video games?
I guess a little bit. Yeah. I mean, the people that I talked with in school, I mean, I see with having a twin brother, it's just, you guys we make our own community of things. Like, we have each other to bounce ideas off of or talk about games or whatever. We had a few friends in school that would, like, I specifically remember in Metroid, like, there was like the high jump boots or something like that.
Yeah.
There was a way to find those, and we could not find them.
Yep.
And there was one kid in school who we saw. We would always bug him, like, because he knew where it was.
That
and
so kid. There's always that one kid who knew the one thing that you needed to know.
And I don't even remember now if he actually ended up showing us or telling us. But, like, I remember us bugging him about it. Yeah. So, like, there was, I think, that I think the big thing that kind of got me like into it was Pokemon that came out for the Game Boy, because we had that and we were able to trade with people, and that was kind of like, you know, that was like a phenomenon. I was like 9 or 10, so I was like the age they were marketing.
I never got into Pokemon. We have established I am older than you. I do not think I was the demographic, even though I know a lot of people my age who jumped in at that time, but I just couldn't. Like, I was moving into Resident Evil. Final Fantasy VII.
For sure.
You know?
That was a perfect type of game for us. I would get red, my brother would get blue, and we would just play it and trade. And then same thing with when Zelda, they made the Oracle of Ages, Oracle Seasons games. Awesome games, but you could play one and go into the next one, and then we just switch. So it was,
you know, there was like a lot of lamenting about like how games were for kids, and I'm so glad I was not an adult in the 80s and 90s, because I think I would have felt that I was not allowed to play it, even if I was interested in it, even though I don't think that's the mindset now.
Yeah.
Like, now I think everyone's like, oh, video games. Anyone could like a video game. A grandfather could like a video game.
Well, a lot of the commercials back then, too, had,
like,
weren't they like, I mean, towards kids, but weren't there some with a guy in a business suit just sitting back playing a Game Boy? Like, what, I could have sworn.
I bet. I don't remember that one.
Well, in Console Wars, they talk about it a little bit, about some of those commercials, but I know that there's like, and with editing some videos that I have to edit, there are some commercials for I think it was Game Boy Advance or something, where it's like older guys waiting in line playing a Game Boy and having a ball, you know? Like,
I'm glad that stigma has been removed.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But I remember like this whole you know, the NES generation is teenagers now. Like, games need to grow up. And I personally did not want that. Or, like, I didn't want it to replace things. Like, in my mind, I was like, well, sure, you can have, you know, you can have a Halo or a Resident Evil next to a Mario or Zelda. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't need to grow up. They need to expand, sure, yeah, but they yeah. don't need to... I don't know. I always took umbrage with that, and I definitely had friends who were like, "Oh, I'm not gonna play Wind Waker. That's a kiddie game." And I was like, "Are right. you crazy?
Yeah,
it's so like, oh man."
It took
man.
Me a while to play that game, but when I did, it was actually, "Oh, this is
right."
Very, yeah.
He was like, "Oh crap! What
yeah.
am I doing?"
Yeah, I so that's also interesting because my little brother is primarily Xbox One, mm-hmm. Battlefield, Call of Duty.
Shooter.
Kind of shooting game. He has a Switch, but he doesn't play it as much. And I was like, what are you doing? There are yeah. so many games for you. There's so many good games to play. But he's playing Destiny and, mm-hmm. and you know, getting a squad together and mm-hmm. stuff. So that's... I want to say, is it when Xbox came on the scene? That's kind of... Where did that divide happen?
So this makes me think a couple things. And see if you agree with me on this.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's the fact that it's the console. I think it's... I think it's the genre. Mm-hmm. So what I was going to say was, you know, I think the NES and the Super NES in that era is platformers.
Yeah.
You know, and then as PlayStation and bigger media came out, like JRPGs really started to take off.
Yeah.
And now I would then I would say like 2000 era uh-huh. to like 2014 is like shooters. Like yeah. shooters in America anyway. Like well, shooters. Yeah, those well, are so popular.
Well, I mean, even with the N64, you got GoldenEye and Perfect yeah. Dark and, mm-hmm. and like mm-hmm. that was such a but mm-hmm. then at the same that's the same system that had Mario 64 and
but there are people who don't know the N64 as the Mario system. They know it as the GoldenEye system. Yeah, like some people only bought the N64 yeah. for GoldenEye.
Yeah.
I you know?
See, yeah.
And I think like with the development of like shooter mania, that's not really Nintendo's strength.
Right.
So that's why the Wii kind of came into existence of like, okay, maybe we should expand the blue ocean, quote unquote, strategy.
Wind Waker thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. No, I think definitely when Halo came out, you know, it was a different type of shooter. You would only have two guns.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what are you doing? What is this?
Mm-hmm.
This
isn't... You had shields.
Yeah.
Like you had...
Mm-hmm. And you could, like, rest... I don't know if it was Halo specifically, but there were games where you could rest behind an object and then regain health.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, that's not mm-hmm. what this... I think where that's... are my health power-ups? You know, like...
Yeah.
So, like, it's interesting where that kind of... Where that jump... And then there's, like, the term hardcore gamer. He's like, dude, you're not a hardcore game. And like, where is that? What's the...
I almost associate that with something like PC.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're a hardcore gamer, you're not a console gamer because you can't increase your console power.
Right.
You know, like, if you're a hardcore gamer, you've got, like, Alienware PC that you are constantly modding with, like, all sorts of crazy things, and you are playing, like... World of Warcraft or Battlefield. Like, you're playing
League
active
of Legends,
online...
stuff mm-hmm. like that, yeah.
I think is what hardcore... I don't agree with the definition.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you're a hardcore gamer? Go be Mega Man 2. tell me how good you are.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm old, so... Right. So what do you think, like... do you like gaming culture now versus then?
Well, so that's the thing. It's like, you know, and I guess I've just noticed this more. I mean, we both kind of, I got you kind of into the world of YouTube and gaming. And through that lens, we can see kind of a lot of what it's kind of become a little bit.
You mean Fortnite?
Yeah. Well, Fortnite, but or any... Fortnite is, I think, a big drive of it. Like, but like... Specifically, the way that you know, so this editing job that I do, you do, you got to get footage, and if I get footage of, you know, somebody else's gameplay, and it's Fortnite or whatever other game,
or,
they're streaming it, so people are playing games for the sole purpose of streaming it online so they can become popular, so they can make a lot, so they can become famous like Ninja and then make a living playing games.
Like when I heard about Twitch.
Yeah.
Man, how old is Twitch? Like 5 years, 6 years old? Is it older than that?
It might be older than that. I don't know, but I only found out about it like 3 or 4 years ago.
I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Like someone told me about it, and in the most rudimentary way, it was like, oh, it's a place where you can just post your like gameplay video. I was like pre-recording, or like, no, you play live and it streams it live and people can just watch you play games. And yeah. I was like, why?
Yeah.
I hate watching people play games.
Yeah. There were times when growing up where it would be like me and my friend would be over and one of us would play a single player game. We'd pass it back and forth.
Sure.
You know, or I would, he would help. And it was just cool having someone there, mm-hmm. but it's not that. It's weird.
And it's not like watching a cutscene. Yeah. You know, like going on YouTube and watching all the cutscenes to Final Fantasy X or Metal Gear or whatever. Yeah. Like it's watching people play a game. I don't get it. Yeah. And they make money doing it.
Right. Well, yeah. And then there's that kind of expected thing of like, if you're watching, Chip, throw me a dollar or whatever, mm-hmm. so I can keep doing this. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, and like, I don't know. It's weird to me.
So this has been around in some form. Like wearing a Nintendo World Championship.
Yeah, for sure.
Shirt.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And that's competitive. So I don't necessarily want to say compare what that is to esports, because I feel like esports, these competitions.
Sure. I agree. Like I think like the monetization on Twitch and of gaming channels, I would argue, is different from esports. I think that there's a ton of overlap.
Oh, for sure.
You know, usually if you've got one, you're trying to do the other.
Yeah, yeah, because you want to, I imagine it's like anything, but like you want to make sure, you want to keep practicing mm-hmm. your stuff. And I don't know that Ninja plays on a team of any sort, but he goes to competitions and like tries uh-huh. and whatever uh-huh. you know, like, so it's interesting to see where that's gone, because like this is what, 1990 is when the Nintendo World Championships was.
Did you go to that?
My brother just got me the shirt.
Okay, cool.
He lives in New York, so he gets like
a lot. I had a friend go to that, that's why I ask.
That's cool.
It is cool.
I would have been three.
It was basically The Wizard, the movie The Wizard, what he said it was like.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's kind of what this is now. But like, is it healthy for, I mean, esports are one thing mm-hmm. and it's so weird. I don't know what like my child would do if they're like, I want to train to become the best at this video game and play competitively on a team. Like, but you need to pay things. How are you paying? I don't know.
As Dan and I probably both know this, Ninja makes $500,000 a month.
Yeah, at least.
Through investments and donors and stuff. And I'm like, why are you donating? And that's just, he is the top tier. I would say he's probably the highest paid esports person.
I imagine.
But I found out recently, like my nieces and nephews are getting closer to college age. Uh-huh. They offer scholarships for like esports.
Interesting.
For like Fortnite and stuff. Like right? Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Still
paying off my student loans.
Student loans are great. Great. And esports are weird to me because unlike regular sports have been around hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Fortnite will not be around hundreds of years. It may be around another 2 years. You know, like something will replace it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Something will replace
it. You know.
But like there's also the argument of you can't get a concussion playing, you know, like.
No.
So like it's interesting because there's talk of, you know, because like ESPN covers some esports now.
Whoa.
Yeah. And on one of their channels. And then also there's rumors or murmurs of it being in the 2020 Olympics, which is.
What?
Yeah. Well, it takes place in Japan.
If anyone's going to push it,
Japan. So I don't know if that is part of it, but like that's interesting in itself. Because you dedicate, I mean, just in the league of social skills in things of like you dedicate yourself to being online. Like some of these kids that I take footage from for mm-hmm. these editing videos, our kids. They're like 7 years old playing these games,
14,
swearing, 15, you know, and at people online and like bullying and just not like you can easily look up kids losing their shit because, like just compilations of that online because they don't they can't handle losing in Fortnite.
Well, and I mean like not not to get too depressing about this, but I mean recently the Madden event where that guy
he just did
who just brought shotgun was it
I
like walked in
was,
with a shotgun
something.
After losing and killed some people and it's like oh my god like
it's like so like you have that kind of balance and maybe this will even out at some point where you're not getting you can't you have to you don't have to deal with people and things and stuff like that because you're spending a lot of time dealing with online trash. Like, I mean, because people who watch streams sometimes troll and they don't like they're not the nicest.
It's really brave. It's it's really easy to be falsely brave on the internet.
You
know, there's lots of trolls out there. I mean, we haven't even mentioned incels. You know,
I don't know what that is.
You don't know what an incel is?
Incel, no.
Oh my god. This is what kind of scares me about video games online is so incel is really quick as far as I understand it is a short-term slang for incelibate, which is two words combined together, which is involuntarily celibate. It is typically men who are usually white and are very angry at women who will not sleep with them. And then there are like incel groups online, like websites that you can come to and like complain about women and bash about women. And usually these groups also happen to play video games.
Yeah. That's what that whole Gamergate thing.
A little bit. Yeah. And it's stupid, Dan. It's so stupid. Like first off, just learn to deal with rejection.
Yeah.
And learn that women do not want to sleep with everybody.
Right.
Like, it's like, come on. Like,
well, I mean, there's a different debate in general. It's just because, like, you have better graphics now in games and how the developers and people choose to display women versus, you know, men in the games are kind of, you know, well, goes along with what some of those people see, but...
Yeah. I mean, like, oh, man, we're really, like... Watched like Anita Sarkeesian?
No.
Like any of her stuff?
No.
Like she talks about feminism in relation to video games.
Yeah.
So it's like, why are you always playing someone who's rescuing a woman?
Yeah.
Like why is
yeah.
Like there's an ingrained sexism to video games. And I would argue that it extends from other mediums too,
sure.
Like books and music
well,
and stuff.
Well, even like, yeah. In the Console Wars book, really, if you haven't read it.
I need to read it. I really want to read it.
Pick it up. they had a choice when Nintendo did, when they reinvigorated this market. Video games, how are they going to market it? Market as a toy. So they have to market it either towards boys or girls. And they chose to, you know, market towards young men.
Sure.
And that's that. Mm-hmm. That couldn't have helped.
No,
but
that set a precedent that continued for a long time.
Right. And I think that, and you know, I'm not as hyper aware of it, but I feel like it might be getting better.
I would argue it's getting better.
There's a lot of strong female leading characters in video games. Like one of the reasons why I kind of want to get a PS4 is there's Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, Horizon Zero Dawn's a great example.
Which
you know?
Is like Zelda on crack from what I hear. So, yeah.
You know.
So I don't know. You know, like, but I mean, Japan is still Japan, and they still kind of do.
I mean, Japan has never been. I mean,
progressive.
It's not super progressive, unfortunately. But even like in America, like if you look on the other side of the camera, so to speak, most developers, like the workplaces, are still like 80 to 90% men.
In
gaming.
There's a lot of. I mean, I listened to IGN's Nintendo podcast.
Yeah.
Nintendo Voice Chat.
NVC.
And they have I always noticed whenever I was on there, I was like, there isn't really anybody. What's IGN like? They don't have a ton of representation,
right?
Men or for women or people of color, really, because this short panel of you know people, there's been on and off women who come and go, but then they kind of leave for different companies.
Yeah,
and you know, there's one who's on there now, which is great. She's awesome. But you know, that starts kind of with them. I don't know how big their staff is and how much they include that, but like it also depends on what the, I mean, there were reports or like about something at IGN like last year about so one of the female workers like called out somebody for harassment or something like that, and they took care of it, but they like she doesn't work there anymore. So it is an industry, and like you, I mean, this is a snowball effect. The tech industry, every industry, there's there's a problem.
Movies, oh god, right? I don't want to bring up Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah,
but yeah,
but so it's kind of getting. Where do you think that this culture, where do you think we're gonna, I mean, because like with the internet changed how the gaming culture was, how we got information. Now if you get magazines for video games, it's kind of, it's more of a nostalgia thing. Like Nintendo Force is a really cool magazine that kind of is a spiritual successor to
Nintendo Power,
and I got that when it first came out, but it's a monthly magazine, and I don't know if they have exclusives anymore, but like things break, things leak, and then like you get, you know, it's tough to, they try. And then there's also Nintendo Power Podcast now, Nintendo puts out. So it's.
So what's your, what question, I guess the question was like, wanting to ask?
The internet's changed how the whole community got information, things. Now that we've had some years to maybe do like figure with the internet and video games, where do you think it's going to head? Like, how are we gonna? Is there anything gonna change it? Like,
you know, like, I don't think games can ever be disconnected from the internet. Like, they of any industry that's gonna be affected by the internet, I feel gaming is pretty high up on the list of things.
Yeah.
And now that the two have married, they'll never be disconnected. Because they kind of push each other a little bit in each way too.
Yeah.
It's harder to be surprised now, which makes me sad. And there's like a, there's like a business of just like gossip, you know, and like trying to figure out this and like, I mean, like Nintendo Power really was my only gateway into this as a kid. And it was like, oh, Japan has Final Fantasies I've never played. That's so weird. Yeah, what? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like it never occurred to me as a kid about gaming elsewhere. So I don't know where it's gonna go. Like, there's talk about like full streaming service.
I was gonna say like a Netflix of games kind of thing.
There's... Yeah, I don't know. Like Nintendo is kind of pushing this way a little bit. Like, the Switch doesn't use CDs. Like it does use carts.
Yeah.
And you know, more and more games, like you buy the disc now, but then it has to download the other 30 gigs. Right,
yeah.
I don't know if I want it to go fully streaming.
Yeah.
Like. I would like the option to still be there because I love owning a thing.
I think, and I hope that they think, like for me, one of my biggest recently is figuring out whether I'm going to buy Smash Ultimate Digital or, because like I had 3DS Smash Digital and I love just being able to play that whenever I can. But then they have a really cool collector's edition coming out in the steel. I'm like, damn, why do you, come on.
Yeah.
So I think they know that that exists, that market still exists. I feel like there's going to be some sort of balance. Capcom tried something interesting, and I don't know if you know about this, but like in Japan, if you have a Japan eShop thing with a Switch, you can play Resident Evil 7. Resident Evil 7 was an online kind of cloud-based game.
I thought there was a physical release for Resident Evil 7. Was there not?
Not for Switch.
What about for other consoles?
Oh yeah, that was out for. But that was a powerful game for all those. That was a full retail release for all the other systems.
But for Switch, they were like, "We're going to do this as a. We're going to test this."
Yeah, they recently tried it in the Japan thing, and it's tough because you can't really play it because like it uses Japan servers. So even if you try to play it here, it's going to just the distance is not great.
Right.
So you're playing. You pay like, I feel like you pay maybe like $8 to play the game for like 40 days or something or a certain amount of time. And then, but you don't keep any saves, I don't think, or maybe the saves are tied to your system. I don't remember how that worked, but it was like an interesting, it's like, oh wow, this is interesting. If companies are trying to find, cause they're running the game on their own servers. So the Switch doesn't have to process it. It's just,
but their server power must be like, ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. So like, I don't know. So like, that was like an interesting thing. I was like, wow, this is interesting. If they're trying to,
I don't. Okay, this is just me personally.
Yeah.
I don't think I would want games to go fully digital.
Yeah.
I definitely don't think I would want games to be fully streaming. Yeah. Like, I think if you're going to stream a game, I think there should still be the option to either let me buy it digitally or buy it physically.
Yeah.
Whether gaming keeps doing that, I don't know.
It'd be interesting if there was something along the lines of how DVDs are doing it now, where you get a DVD and it comes with a digital copy in a store or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if they would do that, but that could be a way that, you know, because they're, like I said, the Switch cartridges are cartridges anymore. There's no CDs, but that's for the tech. Now, as far as like, where the community and stuff is going to be, I feel like, you know, I don't know. Right now, I don't know what's going to make that change. It's hard to predict what's going to change into the next thing of gaming because, you know, there's with Switch, with PS4, you can share stuff, you can stream stuff.
Yeah.
People want to be famous everywhere in companies that own YouTube channels. Love to exploit that because then they make everybody. It's a machine that even IGN has to put up clickbait stuff so they get people, you know, to watch that. Because that's kind of the YouTubers, gaming people are kind of driving the businesses.
To do those
things because that's what they like.
Developer has really like spearheaded that. Well, okay, so. Here's a question for you, and we have to wrap this up, but here's what I think might be a fun final question.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great point about YouTube and like how that YouTube specifically has really like changed how online functionality and like paying for all streaming services.
There's a whole YouTube gaming part.
Do you think consoles will become obsolete?
Obsolete.
Think consoles will turn into services? As like technology and televisions and stuff, like Sony could put
a TV out that plays PS4.
That just has like PS4 streaming.
Interesting.
You know? Like, do you think consoles are on the risk of?
I think that maybe some people, but I think that, and just you know, I know that Nintendo being Nintendo,
I don't
think they'll ever stop. I mean, like they're still. They're still talking about maybe putting out another 3DS iteration or like another DS, but like
they're
still putting out 3DS games. Right. So like, I don't think that. I think that's an interesting idea because there's going to be a certain point where technology is going to hit. No one's going to want an 8K TV. No one's going to like know the difference between 4K. You know, like that our eyes can only. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to find different ways to make things more convenient, but. That's an interesting idea because like a lot of like those like Amazon Fire boxes and Roku stuff are just being put into TVs now.
Yeah.
I don't know that Nintendo will ever do that, but
of anyone who will fight it,
it's Sony doing that. I don't know.
I could see Xbox doing it.
Yeah. Into some Microsoft, degree. They, you know, and because they're just marrying their Windows stuff pretty much with it anyway. So it's, interesting and exciting, but also makes me want to hold on to everything that I still have. You know,
like hold on all to the every systems console.
And all. I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna keep all this and try to.
Right.
One thing I did think interesting is the advent of USB-C and some of that because like that does power and display.
Mm-hmm.
So if I think we might start seeing some USB-C TVs instead of HDMI that just have one cable.
Cool.
plugging it in and then you don't need anything else or like for your devices and stuff like that, kind of how the Switch dock and stuff is.
Switch dock has it.
There's more to talk about. There's plenty more to talk about. But like it's very interesting to kind of just put all the ideas and things out there and
Well, thank you for joining me today, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
If people want to follow your voice, where can they find you?
I don't know. I do a podcast every now and then where I pretend to talk to animals, or I talk to pretend animals, I think is the better thing. So it's called Talking Wild with Dan.
Talking Wild with Dan. Find
that on the internet. I don't tweet a lot, but
probably healthy that you don't, you know, you're probably in a better place.
My Twitter handle is ain't got no tweets. So there's that.
Perfect.
Other than that, I don't know. I don't know.
Cool.
Great. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Dan. And well, hopefully we will have another discussion very soon. Thanks for listening. Tune in soon for another Chicago story.